Time, the silent herald of life and death, success or failure. The unseen force that measures man's destiny, reaching its most fateful moment as it slowly strikes the 11th hour.
Played a big part in the whole business. At any rate, it was chance that began it all. For if I hadn't gone into that particular cafe on the banks of the Seine at that particular time... Oh, but then I'm getting ahead of my story. There were tables outside with gaily striped little umbrellas over them, and I sat at one and ordered a cafe au lait. The man at the next table glanced idly in my direction and then continued to gaze with an odd mixture of astonishment and something else. After the waiter had brought my coffee, he picked up his drink and crossed to my table.
Monsieur Permit.
Oh, I'm always glad of a little company.
You are a stranger in Paris, perhaps?
On holiday. I arrived yesterday evening.
Ah, yes, Paris in the spring. Very charming. May I introduce myself? Honoré Lestat.
Oh, Geoffrey Poppet.
I am happy to know you, Monsieur Poppet.
As we sat there, chatting idly, I began to wonder why this Frenchman should be so interested in me. In spite of his air of polished charm, there was a certain cold weariness about him. And he seemed to be showing an abnormal curiosity in the details of my life. I must have shown that I was getting a little restive.
A thousand pardons. Not that you are wondering what is the reason for my sudden interest in you, Monsieur Francis.
Well, that was, more or less, the trend of my thoughts.
And very natural. Allow me to explain. I am secretary to Georges Patourin. You know who he is.
Vaguely, he's a big financier, isn't he?
One of the biggest in Europe. You have doubtless read something of the activities of Monsieur Petourian, but you have never seen his photograph.
No, I don't think I have.
I may ask you because if you had, you would have thought you were looking in a mirror.
You mean wear so much alike?
So much so that you could pass for Monsieur Petourian quite easily.
Well, they say everyone has a double. Now, this is very interesting, Monsieur Lestock, but...
A moment, monsieur. It is possible we may be able to turn this likeness to some account. It occurs to me that you might be of considerable assistance to Monsieur Paturian in certain transactions he is negotiating at present.
What kind of transactions?
Well, everything is perfectly legal, and Monsieur Paturian is a generous man. Anyway, I'm sure he would be most interested to meet you. Perhaps you would. He could not be spare now.
Well, I am on holidays, but... I'm not promising anything yet.
Naturally. Now, if you will excuse me for a few moments, I will telephone Monsieur Paturian. There is no harm in a little friendly discussion.
I was curious to see my fabulous double, so I went with Henri Lestock. The apartment in the Rue de Mazette was not only sumptuous, but striking, and as such provided a fitting setting for the flamboyant personality of a financier.
Ah, my dear Monsieur Francis, I am delighted you were so good as to come and see me.
A most happy thought on your part, Henri.
Let us have a little wine.
I will see to it.
You're very kind, Monsieur Patrick.
You must call me George. To all my friends, I am George. And you are Geoffrey. Geoffrey Parfit, is it not?
Well, that's right.
Ah, even the initials are the same. Now, come and stand here, my friend. Mm-hmm. I stand beside you. Now, look in the mirror. Twin, yes?
Well, the resemblance is certainly remarkable.
Monsieur Parfit's hair is a shade darker.
Of no consequence, providing he parts in the same way as I do. Pour the wine on the knee.
Monsieur Patourian.
George.
George. I didn't promise anything, you know.
Of course. I'm running on too fast. You must forgive me. The wine. Your good health, my friend, Jeffrey.
Good health, George.
Now, let me see if I've got it right. You work in the foreign branch of the London and European Bank, and you're over here on vacation. You speak excellent French.
Oh, my mother was French. She taught me French and Italian.
Ah, that's a kind story. Let me see. The London and European Bank. The chairman is Sir Wilfred Dunster. I must have a little word with him about you, my dear Sheffield.
Oh, that's very good of you.
Not at all. Are we not practically brothers? Now, this little favor you can do for me.
Yes.
Aha, you are a gorgeous young man. That is as it should be. Some more wine on me.
At once.
Now, I will not burden you with all the ramifications of the high finance, but you understand that sometimes it is something of a jungle, yes?
Oh, that I can well believe.
So, at the present time, I'm engaged in a little finesse. But I have rivals who also play finesse. Now, if they were to believe I was taking a holiday away from Paris, away from business, well, they would make certain moves. And if I were really on the spot, I could give them a big surprise. A very big surprise.
So you see, Monsieur Poitou, all Monsieur Poitourian wants you to do is to take your holiday somewhere else and take it as Monsieur Poitourian.
And that's all?
Certainly. You will be doing me a very great service. I should be most happy to pay you, say, 1,000 pounds for your travels.
1,000 pounds? It's a nice round figure. Where must I go?
Anywhere you like, my friend. You choose the place. We will arrange the reservations. The suites, the best hotels, everything. It appeals, yes.
Well, as long as that's all there is to it.
Good. Now, let's suit it just to English. Let us have a look at my wardrobe, and we will fit you up with a dozen or so more suitable to my style. Oh, and here, take this passport.
What about my things at the hotel in Paris?
Oh, Henri will collect them and keep them here for you. Now, we'll go down to my garage, and you shall choose which car you would like to take. Have you decided where you would like to go?
Well, Riviera, I think. Perhaps the Italian coast.
Ah, excellent. Nice time to cross it. Let me think. Yes, Savona. You remember Henri? I went there 3 years ago. Beautiful scenery, beautiful girls. Charming. We reserve a suite at the Grand Hotel. You should take the blue train to Marseille, and you can drive from there along the coast. It is very nice. Very nice indeed.
So I set off as Monsieur Georges Poitourien. It all seemed a bit unreal, but I told myself I'd better make the most of it. It's only once in a lifetime that you live like a millionaire on someone else's money. I sat in the dining car of the blue train that evening, watching the platform of the Gare de Lyon slide away from the window. I was finishing my soup as the chef de train came along.
Monsieur Poitourien?
Oh, yes.
Monsieur, please accept my most humble apologies. I'm desolate that you should be inconvenienced in any small way.
Oh, what is it?
The sleeping compartment, monsieur, there has been a stupid error. The wrong number has been placed on your ticket. That compartment is already taken.
Oh, you mean I haven't got one?
Oh, no, monsieur. It is merely that you were given the wrong number. Your compartment is 31, not 21.
Oh, well, it's all right. There's no difference in the compartment, is there?
Oh, none at all, monsieur. It is just that the number is wrong. I regret that.
Oh, that's all right, that's all right. What about my luggage?
Oh, it is in number 31 now. Everything is ready any time you wish to retire, Monsieur Poitou.
It was raining the next morning when we got to Marseille, so I decided to go on to Savona by train. I got out and made the necessary arrangements for the car to be kept on the railway track, and it was then that I noticed the ambulance. The chef de train was standing by it. Out of idle curiosity, I went up to him.
Hello, Rex.
Morning. I've decided to travel on by train.
Ah, good morning, Mr. Patouille. I'm delighted you find our service so comfortable. I thought you slept well.
Well, yes, thank you. Why the ambulance? Is someone hurt?
This is one of the passengers, Mr. Patouille. Poor man, he is dead.
Dead? Well, how? What happened?
Shot, Mr. Patouille. Very sad and most mysterious. There was no reason why he should shoot himself.
Well, how do you know that he did?
The gun was in his hand, monsieur, but of course there will be an inquiry.
Yes, yes. Who was it?
Monsieur Levin, the gentleman in number 21, monsieur.
I didn't think any more about it. Why should I? The sun was shining when I got to Savona, so I drove to the hotel and moved into my palatial suite. I changed into trunks, grabbed some towels, slipped on a beach wrap, and drove down to the beach. George was quite right. It was beautiful. And so were the girls. I got quite a kick out of the number of glances that came my way from several of the lovelies. No doubt the word had gone round that I was Georges Poitou. And then I noticed one in particular. Sweet, lovely, and tan, with dark, liquid eyes. I returned her smile. She came strolling across to where I sprawled on the sand.
Well, hello. Help yourself to a beach towel.
Thank you, Joe. Oh, I am glad you have been friendly. I thought at first you were going to ignore me.
Well, I did not see you for the moment.
No? I noticed you were busy. You were some old job. Yes, I think you have improved.
Oh? In what way?
You are not so vain. I would not like it. Even though everything is all over, I think we could be friends now.
Well, you know, I don't bear any ill will.
Oh, then you have changed. When I told you we were through, you said...
Ah, yes, I was very silly, but... Well, let us leave the past in the past, shall we?
Of course. Oh, you have no idea how relieved I am. When I heard you had made reservations at the hotel here, I wondered whether it would be best for me to go.
Well, why should you?
I thought perhaps you would make trouble. No idea was wrong. Oh, I am so glad you are coming to me. Now we can be fine.
Yes, of course.
Here, you will get your bath room. Turn around and I will put some oil on for you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you men, you are all the same. Oh. This is strange.
Yeah, what's the matter?
You are not yours, Saturian. Who are you?
What are you talking about?
Oh, don't try to deny it, my friend. Your Saturian had a 3-inch scar across the back of his ribs. A bayonet wound in the war, he said. You're like a knife for all an upside. You have no such scar. Well?
All right, I am not George Saturian, but he knows I'm here. Look, suppose I drive you back to the hotel and we have a drink. It's rather a long story.
All right. But first tell me this. Who are you?
Jeffrey Parfitt. And come to that, I don't know who you are.
I am Anna Mistali. I knew yours 3 years ago.
So I gathered. Right, here's the car. Hop in.
Thank you. I see you are also using your car.
Yes, I will. Yes. I couldn't resist this one.
I'm not surprised. Look out!
Fortunately, we weren't going very fast because both the brakes and the steering wheel refused to answer to any control. The lamp standard we hit made a bit of a mess of the bonnet, but that was about the extent of the damage. Then we both climbed out, merely a bit shaken. Then I thought of the roads on the Alpes Maritimes and what would have happened if I'd carried out my original intention of driving along the coast to Sedona. I thought of the dead man in compartment 21. And I realized that someone was trying to kill Georges Paturien. In other words, me. Which made me the bunny.
When sudden disaster strikes, most people fall into two classifications, the quick and the dead. Such was the case at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. On the USS California, Lieutenant Ben Gunner, Jack Ferris, was in charge of the ordnance repair party when the first torpedo exploded right under his station. Severely injured and stunned by concussion, which blew him 10 feet into the air, Ferris quickly recovered and set up a hand supply ammunition train for the anti-aircraft guns. Oil and water were rushing in upon trapped crewmen through a gaping hole in the deck. Men were overcome by the fumes. When a second torpedo struck, Ferris ordered counter-flooding. Although twice rendered unconscious by nauseous fumes and badly injured, Ferris gallantly risked his life in rescuing many shipmates who were about to drown in oil. By his inspiring leadership, he kept the ammunition flowing and was largely responsible for keeping the USS California in action during the attack. Gunner Jack Ferris's heroic actions throughout the fighting exemplified the values and ideals inherent in the code of conduct of American fighting men. Men who put their trust in the United States of America.
We could hear the hotel orchestra playing in the distance as we sat at a small table in the cocktail bar. Anna looked quite delightful as she twirled the cocktail stick pensively between her fingers. She was the only brightness in what appeared to be a pretty grim future. If there was going to be any future for the Jeffrey Parfitt. Well, I might as well make the most of what there was, so I crooked my finger and silently the waiter deposited two more drinks in front of us. Anna looked reflectively from her drink to me.
You know, Jeffrey, you're much too nice a person to die so young.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I'm certainly very interested in avoiding such a catastrophe. How do we know he's anticipated these attempts for dead delay? No, not really. And then Orville tells him about me.
And now, can't you also say that if someone is going to flare up, it would be far better to flare up with you instead of yours.
What about the typical of yours? And I fell for it. You know, Anna, I think you better carry out your original idea of me. By no means. But it might not be too healthy for you. It's so too much.
All the same, I am not safe. The question is, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to be very careful. Very careful indeed.
You could return to Paris.
I could try, but there's no guarantee I'd get there. I can't return to England without picking up my passport and clothes from Georges. No, I think the best thing to do is to stay here and hope I'll survive until Georges pulls off his deal, whatever it is.
Oh, look.
Huh?
Oh, look.
What? No, he's coming across to us. He's got a nerve.
Oh, you are here.
You look surprised, don't you? What are you expecting to attend a funeral?
I was not expecting to see you. Not that she knows who you are, naturally.
Well, you don't think I could bluff it out with her?
No, of course not. We did not know Anna would be here, or we would never have forgiven her own.
Yes, I'm sure. And I didn't know someone was going to try and kill me. Thoughtful of you not to mention it.
But we didn't know either. I see you do not believe it.
You see right.
The first we knew of it was when Georges read in his morning paper of the man who was killed in your sleeping bed. Then he realized what was happening and sent me to warn you immediately.
Well, I had the warning when the second attempt was made.
Right, you were warned. But please do not regard us as monsters. Well, if we were, why should I rush across half a continent? I tell you, I haven't slept for 24 hours.
All right, let's take your good intentions as read. The point is, what do we do now?
We must leave here immediately. I have a car outside. If we get away quickly and keep moving, it will be difficult to trace us.
Yes, that makes sense. All right, I'll see to the luggage.
No luggage. Leave everything at the hotel. We must not advertise our departure.
What about Anna?
I think Anna had better come with us. They might try to find you by bringing pressure on her.
Yes, that's true. Will you come, Anna?
Of course. I will get myself up. It will be cold riding through the night.
Then hurry, and nothing else, man. It must appear that we are merely going out for a little fresh air. Is there anything following us?
No, nothing at all, in fact.
Nevertheless, we had better make sure. Let's switch off the light and pull into the side of the road.
Riding at the cliff here?
Yes, this will do nicely. Cut your engine.
It was as the car came to a standstill that I suddenly remembered. Alving had said he had no sleep for 24 hours. It only took 4 hours to fly down from Paris. So he'd come by road, and that meant he must have left last night, the same time as I did. He could have boarded the blue train of Lyon and shot Monsieur Lavon. He was putting his hand into his jacket pocket as I reached behind him and grabbed his arm. As the big revolver came out, I put an arm lock on him, but the barrel of the gun was against Anna's side.
Break your arm. Not quick enough, my friend. If you put any more pressure on my arm, I shall pull the trigger. Keep still, Anna.
So it was you that tried to kill me.
Let go of my arm, or I'll pull the trigger.
Listen, I swear to you that if you fire that gun, I'll break your arm immediately and your neck within 2 minutes.
I shall count up to five. If by the end of that time you have not released my arm, I assure you I shall fire.
Don't release him, Jeffrey. He will kill anyway.
One, two. You have no chance, my friend.
Neither of you. I mean what I say.
Release my arm. And we will talk.
No, Jeffrey, no.
We talk now.
No, when you release my arm, for you. You did very well. But.
Well, do we talk?
If you like. Your nerve is good.
Oh, let him go, Jeffrey.
Don't worry, I won't. Just remember what I said about breaking your neck if you feel like firing a gun.
An interesting situation. If I fire, you kill me. If you try to disarm me, I kill Anna.
And get killed yourself.
Quite. So, we are at a deadlock. But I think I have the advantage. You dare not do anything, and you will get fired first.
Someone will come.
No. It is a remote part of the coast. And, of course, there is no one following you at all, my young friend.
Why do you want to kill me?
Things have been going a little wrong with our affairs. So George and I decided it was time to leave, with, of course, several million pounds. We had arranged everything except one important detail, which was solved when we saw you. A perfect. If Monsieur Georges Paturian dies in Savona, the police will look no further for him or their money.
Mm. And what about Anna?
We did not expect Anna to come into the picture, but she is a meddler. So I'm afraid Anna will also have to go.
I've told you what's going to happen if you touch Anna.
The car coming up the hill.
So, it won't stop. Yeah, it has stopped. Yes, but it has stopped at the foot of the hill. Coughing couples do not bother to come out this far. Not your lucky night, my friend.
Look, suppose we make a bargain with you.
What bargain? You have nothing to offer. There's your life. No, my friend, it is yours too. As you will get tired of holding that arm lock. And I have the only gun.
Then Jeffrey must be sure and kill you before he gets tired.
Jeffrey will not do that at the expense of your life, Anna.
Suppose we agree to say nothing and let you go.
And have the sure looking for George and me for the rest of our lives. No. I'm sorry, but we must have a dead George Paturian.
Henri, are you there?
I did not.
That's strange.
Yes, George, in the car. Why have you come here?
To render any necessary assistance, Henri. Or have you completed the little job?
No. There is a small difficulty.
Then how fortunate I decided to come. Who is the lady? Why, it is little Anna. Dear, my little Anna. What a pity you mix yourself up with these affairs of business. Now, Henri, what is your little difficulty?
The fact that I have his arm in a lock. And if he fires, I'm going to break his neck.
Well, well. What a tiger little Jeffrey has grown into. Is that correct, Henri?
Yes, I have the gun against Anna.
Splendid. It couldn't be better. All right. Fire the gun, Henri. And then, if you so desire, you may break Henri's neck, my dear Jeffrey.
You're insane all of a sudden.
Don't worry. I shall avenge you, Henri. I'll shoot our young friend Jeffrey. Then I shall have £10 million all to myself. I think it is an excellent solution.
You will be sorry if you try to double-cross me.
My dear Henri, why do you think I make this tedious journey all the way to Savona? I cannot think of any reason why I should share the spoils with you. You have served your purpose. Now, are you going to shoot Anna, or shall I start the firing? A shot in the petrol tank will, I think, account for all three of you.
Don't go any further, either of you. There's enough life for more shooting, but I hope it won't be necessary.
Is he dead?
Oh, yes, I'm quite a good shot. You know, you two young people are really very bright. The way Anna leaned forward and you released my arm to allow me to alter my aim, it showed a very high measure of intelligence. Well, that seems to have cleared up the little matter of George Paturian, so I think we'd better start moving.
Yes. Where to? What's your idea now?
That, my friend, depends on you. We will go up into the hills and talk about it. We don't want to be found here, so start walking, both of you.
Jeffrey, will you pass me my hand back from the car seat, please?
Oh, yes. We mustn't leave that behind. We don't want any traces. That's right. Now, the lady is equipped. We will set up. You first, I will follow behind you. We leave the road here and go up these hills.
Taylor, the going's a bit rough. Here, take my hand, Anna.
Oh, yes, that is a nice touch. I'm a sentimental man, and you make a very nice couple. Straight up the hillside, please. There's nothing more for you to worry about now, Monsieur Paturian. The situation has altered entirely. George Paturian is dead, and I'm the only one who knows where the money is safely hidden. So, we are all in a position to make a deal.
But as we started up the hillside, I knew perfectly well what kind of deal Henri had in mind. Of course, he didn't want to shoot us by the car. It would be untidy, to say the least, to have two corpses of George Paturian lying there. And Henri wouldn't relish the job of carrying our bodies up into the hills. Far better if Anna and I could be persuaded to transport them there ourselves. By the time we were out of sight of the car, I decided what to do. I squeezed Anna's hand reassuringly, then released it and gave her a push to one side. I stumbled forward to my knees.
There. What's the matter? Why have you fallen down?
I caught my foot in a rabbit hole. I think I've twisted my ankle.
You can't see you walk.
Well, I don't know. Just give me a hand.
No. You don't have to do that way, my friend. Get up.
Well, I can't put any weight on my foot.
Well, it doesn't matter. I think we have come far enough. This will do.
This will do for what?
For this.
It's all right, I've got his gun now. Oh, that was a tricky moment.
Put it into my shoulder.
Oh, you're so frightened, I would leave.
Please, pipe down, Henri. Well, you're one in a million, Anna.
Oh, so lucky I kept the little gun when I set my rat. You knew I had it.
Yes, I felt it in your handbag when I passed it to you.
Oh, I hope you would.
All right, Henri. On your feet. It's your turn to start.
Listening for another mounting drama of action and suspense when we again bring you The 11th Hour.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.